Welcome to the dsmith.org podcast for Wednesday, January 10th, 2007, Coupled Bonding Conductors. I'm Doug Smith. Coupled bonding conductors have been used for quite a while in the telecommunications industry. The initial concept was patented by someone, one of my friends at Bell Labs about, I don't know, maybe 30, maybe more years ago now, so it's probably expired. But it's also, in addition to being an interesting effect for protecting telephone systems, it has many other uses, and you could even apply this in a small scale at the circuit board level, potentially for high-frequency noise from things like electrostatic discharge. So we don't have a video screen in front of us here, so I'm going to sort of draw a picture for you in your mind, or if you want, grab a pencil and paper and draw it out as I describe it. So imagine in the right side of our virtual diagram here that we have a telephone system, and it has its own safety ground connection. And let's say that coming out to the left, there's maybe a 25-meter multi-conductor, usually 50-pair telephone cable, going off to the left, going to a lightning protector before the connections go out to the outside world. And so this lightning protector would be on the left side of our sheet, and let's ground it to a different ground, earth, say, and let's give it maybe a 10-meter lead, roughly 30 feet, fairly long, maybe a little longer than normal, but certainly some. I've seen installations that have had protector ground leads that long. And then the telephone wires go out to the outside world. Now imagine we get an indirect lightning hit, so we get some lightning energy on the wire that fires the protector. I'm not going to concern myself much with a direct hit. Direct hit happens, just forget it, everything's off. I remember one time seeing a direct lightning hit at the Civil Defense Office in Broward County, Florida. While I was in high school, I used to work there in the summers, a summer job for a couple summers after sophomore and junior year in high school. And lightning had a direct hit on one of the antennas, came down the coaxial cable, and melted the telephone right on the Civil Defense Director's desk. One of the VHF radios, which were vacuum tubes back then, looked like you took your fist and punched from the speaker grill out, and it blew a fuse box right off the wall and sizzled all the electrical sockets, but just blew the fuse box right off the wall. So I'm not sure there's such a thing as a real lightning protector, but for an indirect lightning hit, we fire the protector. Now we've got a 30-foot, 10-meter ground lead there, so I might expect that this lead is going to have quite a voltage drop across it. In LDIDT, where the DI is 10,000 amps maybe, or 1,000 amps or something, some fraction of a lightning hit. In a few microseconds, times the inductance 30 feet of wire could be quite a bit. It's not unusual to get 1,000 volts across a long ground connection. So, although the protector fires, the voltage on the telephone wire is the protector voltage, which would be very low during firing, plus the drop across the ground lead, and that's starting to head for the telephone system. And if we get a couple thousand volts, which is can happen easily, you could break over the barrier in the telephone line circuit and burn it out. So how can we fix this short of using a shorter ground connection on the protector, which is not always practical? Well, we can use a thing called a coupled bonding conductor. Let's say I take a number 10 wire and I lash it to the telephone cable the whole length, the whole 20-30 meters, and between the protector and the telephone system, and I'll connect the ends of it, one side to the chassis of the telephone system and the other side to the ground terminal of the protector. Lightning hits, get a couple thousand volts across the grounding conductor of the protector, but now that voltage relative to the chassis of the telephone system is now the voltage across that bonding conductor, which would tend to lower because current's going to flow, be a little less voltage between those two points. So let's say we get 2,000 volts from end to end across that grounding conductor. We'll call it plus on the protector end, minus on the telephone system end, voltage drop, LDIDT drop across that conductor, maybe a little resistive drop as well, but mostly inductive drop. That will induce into the telephone wires a source voltage, which is trying to run a current in the other direction, of the same polarity, plus on the protector end, minus on the telephone system end. And if we got really good coupling, we might get half of the voltage induced. So if we had 2,000 volts across the number 10 wire, we might get 1,000 volts into the telephone, induced into the telephone wires, which would a little on the optimistic side, but it's maybe a third rather than a half might be more typical. But now, starting at the protector block end, we have plus 2,000 volts. Then the induced voltage along the telephone wire is 1,000 from plus to minus as we go toward the telephone system, which subtracts from the protector voltage, and the telephone system only sees 1,000 volts relative to its chassis instead of 2,000. It's called a coupled bonding conductor. Sometimes, instead of lashing a heavy wire to a telephone cable, they'll use the unused pairs in the cable. If you've got a 50-pair cable and you're only using 20 pairs, you take the other 30 pairs and ground them, it's a pretty good connection, and it's more tightly coupled as well than a lashed wire on the outside would be. So this is called a coupled bonding conductor, and it can be very effective. It's been in use in private branch exchange customer premise telephone systems for years and years and years, since the 70s, and it's patented way back then, but has been very useful in protecting telephone systems from lightning. How about on the circuit board level? Well, I had an interesting case one time. Now, this is especially useful in two-layer boards, and this was a two-layer board. Had a switching inverter out on the end of the card, opposite end, about as far away as you could get from the edge connector. And it had minus 48 coming out to the power supply and had some input bypass capacitors. Running parallel to that was also 5 volts coming from the back plane. Well, when you plugged the board in, there was an inrush of current to charge up the input cap of the filter of the power supply. And that inrush of current caused 7 volts to be induced in the nearby 5-volt lead that was parallel for several inches. And in such a direction as to add to 5 volts, we ended up momentarily, for a very short period of time, as you plugged the board in, you could end up with 12 volts on the plus 5 supply and parts of the board at the other end of this wire coming out. And about every 10th or 20th time you plug the board in, some 5-volt device would pop off, would burn up. There are a number of ways to fix that. One could just increase the spacing a little bit, move the power supply to the edge connector, is probably where it should have been in the first place, move the input cap, or move another cap a little closer, put a little inductor in series with the wire coming in. There's a million things you could do to slow that down or move the power supply. Or you could use a coupled bonding conductor. Suppose I put a ground conductor, the same ground as the 5 volts, run it right next to it along in between the 48 wire and the 5. Well, the 48 inrush would induce a voltage in that ground wire, and that would set up a current in the opposite direction that was flowing in the 48 wire, which would partially, not completely, but partially cancel the field as far as the 5-volt wire was concerned. And so this is not how we fixed it, so I'm just surmising now. Maybe instead of inducing 7 volts, maybe it would get 3 volts or something like that, maybe 2 volts. And that would be less of a problem and might be enough to fix it. It's been so long, I forget how we actually fixed it. That's not what we did. We didn't add a ground wire. I think we moved the switching supply to where it should have been in the first place. And that's just a small-scale version. There's less need of these, on multi-layer boards with ground planes, and generally it's not needed these days with proper layout. And it, again, the technique is one for where you have a signal that's much bigger and more powerful than the signal you're trying to protect, in this case the telephone wires versus the lightning. Using this is probably not so necessary, and to the extent it takes up room, not even desirable for small signals on logic signals on a board. And the other thing you have to worry about if you try to do this, they call it guard traces on a board, is that if the connections into the ground plane are a significant fraction of wavelength, you get a parasitic transmission line shorted on the ends, and it can cause all kinds of interesting problems that are well known in the literature. So not so useful there, but certainly for external wires and on two-layer boards, it's a useful technique. Well, thanks for listening, and send any comments to Doug at dsmith.org. One more point before I leave. On February 19th through the 22nd, next month, I'll be holding a series of short seminars in Newport Beach, California, in a very nice resort setting, limited to 6 people, one-on-one kind of a thing. I think we have 1 or 2 spots open left, at least one. So if you're interested in that, just let me know, Doug at dsmith.org. Well, again, thanks again for listening, and should have the next podcast out within a week or so.